Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members, please mute your mics at this moment. This meeting is held through remote hearing pursuant to Rule 10.01. I call the Committee Legislative Assistant to take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Vice Chair Jay Jong. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Baker. Daphne,
present.
Frankie.
Present.
Greenman.
Present.
Haley. Jurgens.
Present.
Cagle.
Present.
Katiza Watun.
Present.
Olson.
Present.
Tu Zhong.
Present.
Baker. Haley. Chair, we have.
I just admitted Representative Haley to the room. So if you want to give her 1 second to call her out again.
Haley.
Present.
Chair Noor, we have quorum.
Thank you, members. There's a quorum present. And now I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes for February 1, 2021.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton moves the approval for the minutes for February 1, 2021. Any discussions? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes for the meeting for February 1, 2021 have been approved. Having said that, members, today we do have two bills in front of us, and we will be considering those two bills. The first bill we have is House File 63. And I'm assuming we do have Representative Erickson. Yep, I can see you. Members, I move that Representative Erickson's bill, House File 63, be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Having said that, I want to welcome Representative Erickson to introduce her bill and tell us about her bill. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Committee, for hearing House File 63. This is a proposal that directs the Commissioner of Deed, Employment and Economic Development, to request that Mille Lacs County forgive all outstanding loans issued under a 2016 economic relief program for businesses that were affected by the decline in walleye fishing on Lake Mille Lac. It also retroactively modifies the law establishing that program to allow forgiveness of more than 50% of a loan to a business and to remove the requirement that loans not be forgiven unless the business remains in operation in the community for at least 10 years. So this was not really a decline in walleye fishing necessarily. This was a dictate by the Department of Natural Resources because state anglers were reaching the quota. So what happened, if I can give you a little historical background, is that Governor Dayton met with, among locals, Tina Chapman, from whom you will hear later, about what this was doing to business around Lake Mille Lac with no walleye fishing allowed starting August 1st of 2015. Governor Dayton wanted to call a special session to take care of this issue. He did not get his wish, but he did have a committee formed. The former Representative Tom Hackbarth was the House Chair, and Senator David Tomasoni was the Senate Chair. We had three or four meetings, in-depth meetings, in which many stakeholders were present, plus the DNR, plus Department of Revenue, plus a deed, and discussions were held. And in the end, with the help of my locals from the Lake Business area around Mille Lacs, Governor Dayton sat down with them and with me, and we devised this loan program. So in the governor's supplemental bill of 2016, $3.651 million was allocated as a grant to Mille Lacs County to develop and operate the relief program. There was also a $300,000 grant to from Explore Minnesota to the Mille Lacs area tourism, of which Tina Chapman was then the head and remains the head. So that then came to Mille Lacs County as a program, and you will hear from Mike Wimmer very shortly about how that relief program has played out and how this had helped the businesses come back from that closure to walleye fishing. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think you might want to hear from the testifiers.
Thank you so much, Representative Erickson. So as you indicated, you do have testifiers. Just wanted to ask who is going to be the first testifier.
I think you should begin with Michael Wimmer, who is the economic director for Mille Lacs County and has a great knowledge of how this plan has played out and where it is presently.
Thank you so much, Representative Erickson. Mike Wimmer, please welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself, your name, and the entity that you're representing, and please proceed.
Yes, thank you. Mike Wimmer, Mille Lacs County Economic Development Manager. Good afternoon, members of the Minnesota House Workforce and Business Development Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you for providing me with the opportunity to testify this afternoon. My name is Mike Wimmer, and I'm the Mille Lacs County Economic Development Manager, as well as the President of the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers. I have served as the county's Economic Development Manager for the last 2.5 years, and my duties include overseeing the administration of the Lake Mille Lacs Economic Relief Loan Program. I would like to note that Mille Lacs County did not charge any loan administration fees to businesses through the program and received no administrative funding from the state to oversee the program. As you know, the Lake Mille Lacs Economic Relief Loan Program was created in 2016 to assist hard-hit businesses in Mille Lacs, Aitken, and Crow Wing counties who were directly impacted by the decline in walleye fishing on Lake Mille Lacs. 37 businesses were assisted across Mille Lacs, Aitken, and Crow Wing counties through the loan program. As of today, only 3 businesses have ceased operations, showing the high impact the program has had in assisting area small businesses through this difficult period. Per the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, leisure, hospitality, and accommodation make up 11% of the share of employment statewide as of 2019. However, across all 3 counties included in the Lake Mille Lacs Economic Relief Loan Program, the percent share of employment in these 3 industry sectors is higher than the state average. In Aitken County, leisure, hospitality, and accommodation make up 15% of the share of employment in the county. In Crow Wing County, that share is 19%. And in Mille Lacs County, leisure, hospitality, and accommodation make up 29% of the share of employment in the county. Moreover, as we are all well aware, the COVID-19 pandemic has hit hospitality businesses perhaps the hardest of any sector in the Minnesota economy. Many hospitality businesses have been forced to drain emergency savings accounts or take on substantial debt to keep the lights on through the variety of programs launched through private lenders, the Small Business Administration, or even the state of Minnesota. Due to the uncertain timeline of when the local, state, and national economy will begin to resemble normal again, many businesses who participate in the Lake Mille Lacs Economic Relief Loan Program are understandably concerned about the impending loan payments that will start for some businesses as soon as the end of this year. I'm here today to voice my support in House File 63, as introduced by Representative Erickson. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Wimmer. Who will be the next testifier, Representative Erickson?
I think Tina Chapman can speak well of tourism in the Lake Mille Lacs area, and I would call on her.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Noor and representatives of this community. My name is Tina Chapman, and I'm the Executive Director of Mille Lacs Area Tourism Council. I worked with Mille Lacs County and most of the businesses to secure those loans, which were given to help those businesses during the turbulent time of catch and release walleye fishing regulations. Since receiving those loans going on almost 5 years ago, many of the Mille Lacs area businesses have not had the opportunity to earn enough money to put themselves financially in a position to pay back these loans. Like COVID-19, where state restrictions have regulated and shut down businesses, we have had the same thing happening to walleye fishing because of the co-management system currently in place. Since the loan's inception, we have not been able to keep a walleye during the summer season. We have had to endure planned walleye closures during summer months and a one fish limit with a 2-inch slot in the winter, and the constant threat of an unplanned walleye closure always looms. The COVID-19 regulations and shutdowns have lasted for months. Our own regulations and shutdowns have lasted for years with no apparent end in sight. I've been told that loans such as ours were given to the Red Lake businesses years ago were turned into grants, but the biggest difference in the 5 years after those loans was that Red Lake businesses were booming and still are, while Mille Lacs businesses are still suffering. A number of those businesses that received those loans aren't even in the hospitality industry, and a few have already gone out of business. What people don't realize is the trickle-down effect that this situation has on our local communities, gas stations, the grocery stores, gift shops, even school enrollments, and our city governments continue to feel the effects. Honestly, I don't believe Mille Lacs will ever see any kind of substantial walleye harvest for years to come if we continue to remain under the current co-management system. We haven't yet had our MILFAC, Mille Lacs Area Fisheries Advisory Committee, meeting with the DNR to determine what our 2021 summer season regulations will be, but I don't see that it will be anything other than a catch and release season, which will continue to have a negative impact on our local economies, businesses, and families. I hope I'm wrong on this. I urge you to convert these loans to grants, which will help these businesses continue to operate into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chapman. And Representative Erickson, do we have any other testifier?
I believe Steve Johnson was going to speak. He's the owner of Portside. Is he present?
Yes, he's.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, thank you for sharing with our committee.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Okay. My name is Steve Johnson. I'm a 36-year business owner on Mille Lacs Lake. I am also the chairman of Eastside Township. We have seven businesses that applied for these loans in my township alone, and two of which are no longer in business. So our township was kind of hit. But we are on the southeast corner of the lake, and we are heavy into tourist activities. So just when we were starting to get our feet under us, then we had the COVID hit last spring. And since then, it's been very challenging for a lot of the businesses. So at this time, it would be a great advantage to my area businesses to be able to turn these loans into grants, and it would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Johnson. Members, please, if you have any questions to the bill author or to the testifiers, seen some few hands already. So I'll begin with Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the testifiers and offer my support to this bill. We need to be offering up these businesses some additional assistance. So, Mr. Chairman, a technical question for you. I believe the motion was to hold this over for possible inclusion. Will that be the norm for these bills coming forward, and then the intent being putting together an omnibus bill towards the later on in the year? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton, for the question. Yes, we need to support businesses that have been impacted significantly by COVID, and also those businesses that are going to be moving forward. So one of our processes that we've done throughout our procedure is to hold over bills, and then we can include them in the omnibus bill as we deliberate on what is in our target and budget and so many other things. So that is the process we have. And based on conversation, the bills that we may negotiate with the Senate that may be put forward to Ways and Means and sent to the floor. So this is one of the bills that we will be held over for possible inclusion, as I stated in my motion earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Devney, Chair Devney.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And I've got a question either for Mr. Wimmer or the author, but I could be wrong. I'm looking at the bill and looking at lines 2.13 to 2.16, where it appears you delete the provision about these loans as they were structured, requiring that the businesses remain in business for 10 years. I remember when this bill was moving through the legislature, and that was seen as a responsible use of a responsible stewardship of state monies, and that the goal was not simply to support the business people who owned the businesses, but to support the job creation and the community at large. And you seem to be proposing we step away from that. And I'm just trying to understand the logic. If anyone could help me with that, please.
Representative Erickson or Mr. Wimmer?
I think I'll call on Mr. Wimmer to respond to that question.
Mr. Wimmer.
Yes, thank you, Chair. You know, when we look at I understand the concerns around the use of state funds. I also look at it as these are big economic drivers around Lake Mille Lacs, and there is a spillover effect in terms of the health of these businesses to the broader economy. As I mentioned, nearly 30% of our local economy, employment-wise, is tied to essentially travel, tourism, hospitality, et cetera. I don't believe many of the businesses, if they were freed up from that 10-year requirement, would all of a sudden close. I think it's really about giving them more room to be nimble, and especially since, as many of you understand, business is going to look different after COVID-19. So I really view it as taking a potential burden off of these businesses and allowing them to to focus more of their capital towards continued improvements as consumer tastes change, as well as I mentioned, the other funding sources that they've had to seek out as a result of the public health crisis.
Chair Devney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wimmer, I might even be more confused now than I was when I asked the initial question. you're talking about, you know, these businesses having a positive impact, driving the economy, and that they need to remain nimble. I would assume that would be in order to stay in business, and that the bill language says, and you get to keep the state money and go out of business. Can you help me square that circle or whatever? What's the benefit to the state of allowing these businesses to retain this money when they're no longer creating jobs and serving that dynamic role in the local economy that you referenced?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. I view it as I think we've seen a few businesses close even with the 10-year requirement, a very small amount, but we have seen that close. I think really, this I view it as something that would allow businesses, as I mentioned, to be more nimble. I think there comes a time where businesses just get to a point where they're leveraged so high that it makes it incredibly difficult for them to adjust to the changing consumer demands, as well as obviously the local decline in walleye fishing. That is my view on it, is that freeing up those businesses from a burden of having to pay these monthly loan payments at around a time period, I might add, that we don't really know what capacity will be able to be open, as well as many other loans that they've taken on to survive this. I think it would be in the best interest to allow these businesses to have that freedom. I would certainly welcome Representative Erickson to share her viewpoint on that as well.
Representative Erickson, if you wanted to share your viewpoint.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to call on Tina Chapman as well. But first of all, it is the grant was made to Mille Lacs County. So it's Mille Lacs County that has to bear the brunt of these loan forgiveness or this loan forgiveness proposal that I've brought forth. You know, when Governor Dayton and I and Ms. Chapman and others negotiated this, Governor Dayton was very adamant to us that these are loans that need to be forgiven. And he had no qualms about putting any parameters around that. So that's one of the reasons I brought forth this forgiveness, because, you know, of his strong conviction that when you have an area of the state that has in the past produced $50 to $75 million to the state coffers because of its thriving tourism, much of it surrounding the fishing on Lake Mille Lacs, that there is no reason not to forgive this when it is not the fault of these businesses that this has occurred. But I'd like to hear what Ms. Chapman has to say as well, because she's been front and center, as has Mr. Johnson, with the business community.
Ms. Chapman?
Hey, Mr. Chair. Most of these businesses, all but with three, they've endured this for 5 years. I've taken some time and spoke to not all of them, but a good number of them, and I haven't had a feeling that there's any intention that anyone's going to close their doors in the next couple years. I mean, it doesn't mean that they won't, but there's not, their intention isn't there. They're willing to fight and continue on. I think it could bring some peace of mind to them and help them move on once we get going again. It's one last thing that they have to worry about, that they have to stay in business at 10 years, and it might even give them the drive to continue on through that 10-year time period. It's kind of my opinion on it.
Mr. Chair, I'll allow you. I see there are a number of other hands up, and I want to let other members ask their questions as well. But I think I want to thank you, Chair Noor, for the wisdom of laying this bill over. We know that the economy in the state is challenged at a minimum. We know that the hospitality industry and tourism, particularly so, due to the COVID pandemic, and state initiatives make sense there. We also know that there are areas of the state for various reasons that are particularly hurting, and that the businesses who have contributed mightily to the state economy and the state coffers and their local communities over the years, who have done nothing to deserve the hardship that they're facing, are coming to us for assistance. And I think it's going to be incumbent on this committee to think about, do we set a standard and provide assistance to all businesses that meet that standard in the state? Do we do a checkerboard where your business gets it and mine doesn't, or mine does and yours doesn't, and this county does and that county doesn't? Or do we say all or none? And if we can't provide assistance where it's needed to all communities and businesses that have been robust in the past, that we then proceed forward and don't, you know, pick friends. So I think laying it over is wise. I think this will be a significant area of conversation for this committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your wisdom, Chair Dabney. And I just wanted to note we have Representative Baker with us in attendance. The next person is Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson, and all the presenters on this bill. I have a question about the, first off, so it sounds like there was, and I don't know who this question might go to, Representative Erickson or maybe Mr. Wimmer, and Ms. Chapman had spoken about a separate program that was set up either at the same time for Red Lake that was converted to grants. But is this, was it the same program, a separate program, same qualifying parameters and amount possibilities, or was that a whole separate bill situation, and how do we speak to that? Because if it's the same program, then when we talk about picking winners and losers, we need to treat everybody fairly under the same guidelines. So I'm just kind of wondering what those parameters were and how do we get to that point? So I'm not sure who would be best to answer that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Franke, they were different programs, but somewhat similar in that the state and the Red Lake Band closed Red Lake some years before the episode at Lake Mille Lac because the fishery was in dire straits. And then there was a program developed to help those businesses, and they were converted to grants, and there was no repayment, as Governor Dayton reminded me. So they're different programs, but somewhat similar in that they dealt with the fisheries of two separate lakes, two very popular walleye lakes, of course, in the state. And, you know, the precedent has been set from my perspective in regard to what was done for Red Lake.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answers my question. I just wasn't sure if it was the same program, same legislation. So thank you, Representative Erickson, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. The next person is Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. I just have a few quick questions about how it would actually work. And looking at Section 2, 2.29, just sort of, can you explain to me what it means for deed to request that the county forgive the loans and what happens if the county, sort of what that means for the county?
Well,
Mr. Chair, Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll lead off, but then I'll turn it over to Mr. Wimmer. I lost my train of thought here, but the grant was given to the Mille Lacs County. Deed, the appropriation went through deed, but then they handed it over to Mille Lacs County, and Mille Lacs County designed and implemented the entire program and has been accountable to deed for reporting the success of the program. And so that's why Mille Lacs County is on the hook, because the loans need to be repaid to the county. And the county has had discussions about this, to which Mr. Wimmer can respond. But I think in the end, they feel for the success of the area, Mille Lacs County, Crow Wing County, and Aiken County, that the best path is to forgive the loans. And that would be because Mille Lacs County was the fiscal agent. I should say it's not going to affect all three counties. It will, but because the money was granted to Mille Lacs County. So perhaps Mr. Wimmer can expand on that, since this is his area of expertise.
Mr. Wimmer.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we would follow, work with deed and go through whatever direction they would put to have that happen. Keep in mind that right now, the county administers this program on behalf of not only Mille Lacs County, obviously, but also Aiken and Crow Wing County, with no stream of administrative funding attached. So, and that has presented its own unique challenges, as I'm sure Deed would attest to. You know, from our perspective, I think there would be broad support, not to speak for our board, but certainly this is a topic they're very passionate about and supportive of. And we would work with Deed to determine whatever necessary paperwork or initiatives need to be put into place to make sure that we're meeting all of their requirements on potential forgiveness.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate that, Mr. Wimmer. So just to be clear, what would this cost the state? Is there a fiscal note, or have we seen that?
Chair Knorr, I know a fiscal note has been requested. It came back zero previously when I introduced this bill last year, but I'm not sure what the Department of Revenue is saying today, because I've not received the fiscal note, and I'm not sure that Representative Knorr has either in his committee. So we don't know if there is a cost to the state, but before it came back negative.
We haven't received any fiscal notes at this point, and it comes from the Legislative Budget Office. I'm sure they will be sending us as we go along, and that's why we have this bill laid over for possible inclusion. So looking forward to that. Representative Greenman, did you have any follow-up?
No, thank you, not at this time. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Representative Baker.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Erickson, for bringing this forward. As a hospitality guy myself, and my hometown is Aiken County, I know the effects up there have been way longer extended with the fishing issues than what even the pandemic has brought on top of this. For some of the new members out there, again, Representative Greenman asked some very good questions. We see these come to in front of our committees sort of on a regular basis. I know that I worked with Representative Olson up in Duluth with a paper mill that was first got a loan, a nice one, but things changed and they really needed some help with that. And we looked at more of a grant option to sustain those jobs in her community. I remember working with Representative Gunther back in the time to say that these things are just, we've got to stay nimble when it comes to helping our businesses in Minnesota. Especially now, I want to make sure I thank the chair for keeping this thing moving forward. And when businesses in hospitality especially have this kind of a request, I hope that our legislators look at them differently right now and extend them some extra latitude to have these requests. Anybody coming forward that is going to put more mandates on this industry, put any more burdens on, extra costs to employers, really needs to take a hard look at this, because this industry can't take any more. And again, I think this is a really great request. I understand the chair has to put this in maybe for a later inclusion, and I want to continue to work with him on really hoping this rises to the top. We'll have other ideas coming, and I hope our chair, as ideas keep coming towards our committee, whether we have some ideas of getting businesses open again, and maybe we can bring some ideas through this that I hope it finds a pathway to urgency. And some are going to have to try to find a quicker way than just getting included at the end. So I'm looking forward to more conversations with these kind of businesses in a crisis mode that we need to save. So thank you, Representative Erickson, for bringing this forward.
Thank you so much, Representative Baker. I know you and I worked so hard to get the economic relief. We sent $517,000 to Mille Lacs County to help, and that was in a form of a grant to businesses impacted in that area. So I'm hoping that we will have more robust conversation and look into everywhere that we see that there's a need we can invest in. So the next person is Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think it's really great that we are helping these businesses that we're dealing with circumstances outside of their control. And, I agree with Representative Baker. A lot of this stuff has come before the committee before. I remember Representative Liz Olson's bill. And we also had a bill that came before us this summer that would really offer a lot of relief to businesses in Minneapolis. And so I think when we think about these kind of proposals, that we need to make sure that we're extending the same gratitude to all businesses across the state. So that's all I had to add. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Cagle. So the I don't see any other person who wants to testify on this bill or any discussions. Representative Erickson, did you have any closing remarks?
Well, before I close, and thank you very much, Chair Knorr, I would like Mr. Wimmer to tell us whether or not Deed requested an administrative fee.
No, they did not.
So all of this was done without administrative fee, and that was good, because that is exactly what former Governor Dayton wanted. He wanted this money to flow to whoever wanted to be the fiscal agent. I convinced Mille Lacs County's administrator to take on this. He has since resigned and left the county, but he worked very, very hard, as did Mr. Wimmer, to ensure that these loans were awarded to businesses that completed an extensive application. Deed reviewed them, as I recall, through Mille Lacs County as the fiscal agent and through Mr. Ullman's review. I visited many times with the county administrator to find out the progress and to find out whether or not these businesses were making strides using these dollars that had gone to the county. So I was very pleased to see that the management of this, without any fee and without Deed demanding any fee, to which Mille Lacs County had to send reports regularly, that this has worked out so well. And so with that, Mr. Chair and Committee, I hope that you will consider seriously the proposal that I presented here, a forgiveness of these loans that were given in 2016.
Thank you so much, Representative Erickson, for bringing this bill forward. We will be taking a deep dive in some of the bills that are coming through this committee. So with that, members, I renew my motion that House File 63 be recommended to be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The next bill in front of us is House File 264, and Representative DeJong moves House File 264 to be recommended to be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Dan Wogamont, welcome to the committee, and introduce your bill to us.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, Vice Chair Zhang, and thank you, committee members. I'm here to introduce House File 264, which is a bipartisan bill that Senator Housley and I are carrying to provide $18 million in funding for the Minnesota Independent Living Centers. These eight centers are located throughout the state and provide for people of all abilities and all ages. It is not a single funding disability service, but rather a one-stop shop. Mr. Chair and committee members, as you can see by the handout that I've provided, the independent living centers actually save our state money. It's a great investment in people that has a fantastic return in both measurable and immeasurable ways. By keeping people out of high-cost institutions like nursing homes, the independent living centers live up to their name, keeping people independent. They provide a range of services from housing referrals, counseling, job skills, advocacy, making accommodations to homes, interviewing and resume assistance, and in some cases, PCA service. Members, Mr. Chair, over the years, millions and millions of dollars have been saved by these services in giving people the right amount of needed services for our constituents to stay in a house or apartment and not be in a high-cost institution. This bill is a win-win for Minnesotans by getting services out to all parts of Minnesota in a high-quality and effective way. Mr. Chair and members, I would note that of the dozens and dozens of requests for funding of different bills that you heard last year, this committee prioritized these centers as one of the few areas to get an increase in funding. But unfortunately, after the COVID-19 pandemic hit, these centers were flatlined by the time session ended. I really appreciate the recognition of need last session from this committee and hope that, Mr. Chair, you and members will see the benefit of providing an increase again this year and follow it through to the governor's desk for signature. With that, Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to introduce Kara Ruff, the Director of Independent Lifestyles of Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. Her center provides services to the people of my district in the greater central Minnesota area. Kara will be providing more specific information about what the Centers for Independent Living do, and I'm excited to share that she has a couple of inspiring videos of clients whose lives have been turned around and transformed by our Centers for Independent Living. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Wogamant, and Ms. Ruff, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and let us know who you represent. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Kara Ruff. I'm the Executive Director of Independent Lifestyles, a center for independent living located in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, and we serve the 11-county central Minnesota region. I'm also the legislative liaison for the Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living, which comprise the 8 centers you see on your handout throughout the state. We're here with friends from across the state watching today to ask for your urgent assistance with House File 264. It seeks to add $9 million to our base funding, which is divided among the 8 Centers for Independent Living. Centers for Independent Living are statutory nonprofit organizations by state law 268A-01. And by providing $9 million, you're helping to fulfill the statutory work that we are required to do by law. Centers for Independent Living are unlike any other service model. We are community-based, consumer-controlled, non-residential, nonprofit organization that serve every type of disability from birth to death, and every level of disability from mild to complex. We provide a wide array of services that are customized to each individual's needs to help them best achieve the independence that's necessary in their own lives. For the past 3 decades, 8 Centers for Independent Living have been asked to serve the entire state of Minnesota with between $1 to $3 million. In comparison to the state budget, that's decimal dust. And when we're trying to serve every population of disability in Minnesota. We've also been given a fifth core service without additional funding that we're mandated to provide. Again, not just for one type of disability, but all. So anyone with a physical, cognitive, mental, emotional, chemical, sensory, any type of disability is qualified for our services. And we serve, again, from the most remote regions of Minnesota to the most populated. An independent study conducted 4 years ago showed that we need at least $18.2 million to adequately fund the state of Minnesota for Centers for Independent Living. We're currently at $3 million, which is shared by 8 entities. We know that you have a lot of issues before you. We know that you have to make tough decisions. And as Representative Wogamant said, we are deeply grateful for your support in the past years. We're asking that you really give us the attention that we so desperately need. A few staggering statistics include that people with disabilities constitute the nation's largest minority group. It's also one that any one of us can join at any time. Between 11 and 15% of Minnesotans have a disability and 24% of veterans have a disability. That's around 600,000 Minnesotans with disabilities and nearly 220,000 with serious mental health conditions. 47% of people with disabilities live below the poverty line. 44% of people with disabilities say they're not being allowed to live independently against their choice. 2/3 of the general population still in 2021 actively avoid people with disabilities because they're not sure how to act around people with disabilities. We are urging you to give this the attention that it truly deserves. Historically, we have further segregated and marginalized people with disabilities in our society with sub-minimum wage employment, group homes, nursing homes, and other indignities against their will. What's really baffling, though, is that all of those other options cost 100 times what Centers for Independent Living provide. That's what's really baffling and provide real transformation and dignity and respect for Minnesotans. Unlike any other service model, we provide services and supports in all areas of life that are consumer controlled. Every Center for Independent Living must be comprised of 51% staff and board who also have disabilities, so that we're governed by those that we serve. Even during a pandemic, which has been horrible and has really exacerbated the situation for people with disabilities who are already marginalized, who are already lacking the technology to keep up with testing and vaccines and all of those things, and who experience isolation at a 10 times greater rate than non-disabled. They are in crisis right now. And the CILs have stayed on the front lines, ensuring people with disabilities were not abandoned and provided with the supports and services they needed to remain independent. Just in the past year alone, we served 7,000 individuals with disabilities. Of those, we relocated 32 out of nursing homes or institutions. Another 2,017 were prevented the necessity of an external placement because of our services. If you look at just the 32 that we relocated, that's a savings to the state of Minnesota of approximately $3.4 million. If we were to take just 25% of the 2017 that we prevented the necessity for, that would be an additional savings of $54 million to the state of Minnesota. And all of this is on the handout that you were presented with. There are still thousands of individuals across the state desperately waiting for our services. I implore you to stop throwing money at large institutions who operate with accountability and without consumer control, and allow Minnesotans and veterans with disabilities the opportunity to become as self-directed as those without a disability. Are nursing homes and institutions necessary? Yes, but not for everyone. We can restore dignity and choice and save millions of dollars for taxpayers. Sadly, as a society, we've become complicit in just doing things the way we've always done, the old system. And Centers for Independent Living have been around and underappreciated and underutilized and underfunded during this time. We want to be clear, we are not here asking for a handout. We're asking the legislature to fund what is clearly cost-effective, produces real results, and to look at the facts. We bring individuals from dependency to independence. We assist them in obtaining homes, education, skills to live independently, parenting skills, financial stability, advocacy, socialization, resources, and so much more. CILs are a one-stop shop for people with disabilities. We've been waiting decades for the help that we need. I've dedicated my career to Centers for Independent Living, and I'm just in my 31st year of serving at a Center for Independent Living. Why? Because I know the systems, the service systems, and I can wholeheartedly say I would not have dedicated my life's work in a setting that didn't work. Centers for Independent Living provide transformative change in people's lives at a fraction of the cost, and we get to ensure that people with disabilities are able to speak and advocate for themselves with consumer control. We've, again, been at this for years, and we struggle. We have tremendous bipartisan support. So grateful to Senator Housley in the Senate also, in addition to Representative Wolgamott. Yet, as he stated, we seem to get lost in the shuffle near the end of the session. We need some heroes this year, and we're praying that it's this committee. We need you, and we need you to follow us through, as Representative Wolgamott said, all the way to the governor's desk. I'm happy to answer any questions. First, I have two taped video testimonials for you that are examples of the transforming power of the work that we do. God and technology willing, here we go.
My name is Michael Boone. I had a series of strokes August 24th, 2000.
Share the video.
Yeah, Mr. Ruff, you may actually want to share your screen again, because we can hear it but not see it this time. So share your screen.
Regular surgeon found, and I went in to have it checked out, and they wouldn't let me go home. Not long after, they scheduled me for open heart surgery, And during that back surgery is when I had two after-3 strokes. I found out afterwards that I had a prior silent one that I didn't know about. And when I woke up, I was completely paralyzed on the left side. I ended up in the hospital for weeks, at which point they moved me to a nursing home in Ada, Minnesota. At that point, I was pretty down. I didn't know what I was going to do. I lived alone, had no options. My parents are old, as I'm getting aged myself, and I had no idea what I would do. Somebody put me in touch with Gordy Howard with the Options Interest Program, which allowed me to come home and live independently. I would not be here without the Options Program at all. I'd still be in the nursing home with probably $5,000 a month. God only knows today. But I live independently at home. I'm not perfect. I can't, you know, there's things I still can't do. I'm recovering. But the Options Program has allowed me to recover here at home and not be laying in the nursing home with people that aren't my age. I had nothing in common with any of them. I was lost, lonely, and depressed. That I needed help. I had no one to turn to. I don't have a wife. I'm a single person. What do you do? I was stuck. I was getting down, depressed. Since I've been home, I've been flourishing. I'm off the meds, off the depression medication, I'm off the anxiety medication. I am able to live, and that's all we all want, is a little bit of dignity, just to live for yourself. Self-respect comes from inside, and the Options has given me that back. I can't say enough. To be independent is cheaper it's cheaper overall for the state of which I've been a resident of the state of Minnesota my whole life. It benefits my state. It benefits all of us. It's common sense to be at home here versus someplace I didn't want to be. It's costing my fellow residents of Minnesota probably $5,000 a month. I know what the old homes cost. I have friends that I had to put the parents there. Who ever thought that I'd be there? I'd still be there if it wasn't for the Independent Living Center.
As you can see, it's having trouble loading. I don't know what the problem is.
You're not alone having some struggle, Ms. Ruff. I think I've also disconnected myself. There isn't any network in my place. So you can always share the video, send it to Travis, and he will share with the committee.
I will do that. Thank you.
Members, I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Rogermont and Ms. Ruff for sharing that information. I know how critical it is for us to support individuals with disabilities, and we need to look in their abilities to be more independent and to support them, especially coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, and to be able to help individuals who are struggling with employment and the several challenges. So I want to thank Representative Rogermont for bringing this bill forward. And members, if you have any question for the bill author or for the testifier, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Wolgemont, thank you for bringing this bill forward. And to the testifier, Ms. Ruff, I've always appreciated when we had representatives from many of your clients would come to the Capitol and testify on your behalf. And unfortunately, we're not able to do this because the stories are so impactful. And I believe Marshall, we have the Southwest Center for Independent Living, and I believe they're affiliated with.
Yep.
Right. And so Ted down there keeps me very informed on what's going on. And so, again, I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward and thank you for your testimony. And hopefully next year we can have clients of yours coming back to the state office building to share their stories. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Representative Hamilton. Any other member with questions? Seeing none, I wanted to thank again Representative Wogamont for bringing this bill forward, and I renew my motion to lay over to House File 264 to be recommended to be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, that is what we have on the agenda, unless anybody has got any other questions. So please ask us. Thank you so much to the presenters. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
I didn't give a chance to Representative Ogerman to have his closing remarks on the bill.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I ask that we do what's right for Minnesota taxpayers. I ask that we do what's right for all of our constituents with disabilities. I ask that we include House File 264 in this committee's omnibus bill and that we all work together and fight like hell to get it to the governor's desk. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Looking forward to for us to deliberate and discuss moving forward with this bill and many bills that are going to be in front of this committee. Thank you so much, Representative Ogerman. Representative Hamilton, you had a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I guess looking again for a little bit of a roadmap, if we can have or when are we going to have an overview, a deep dive of the budget targets? If you can give us an idea around that. And then also, I was wondering, do we have pass-through grants that are built into the base? Yeah, if so, could we learn and understand about those a little more? Thoughts around that, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you so much, Representative Hamilton. Yes, we do have a spreadsheet which covers the base funding and the requested changes. So I'm hoping that you received that one based on the November 2020 forecast, and we're hoping that we'll have a different one once we have the February forecast. So it depends on when we have that information. And we're also waiting to have the budget targets for this committee. Once we know that, we will have a clear understanding. However, we will be having hearings on bills that we are going to take into consideration as we continue to have the conversations about the next steps. For sure, we'll have some discussion about the deep dive into the budget recommendation from the governor's office and the bills that members are going to be bringing before us. So, Travis, do you know of any quick timeline that we have into the future?
I mean, I've generally been putting agendas out with potential bills for each hearing about a week ahead of time. So following this hearing, you'll get the agenda for next Wednesday and sort of so on from there. I get plenty of notices from members and their staff on hearing requests. And depending on time and availability, I've been filling out the agendas looking forward through most of the month, but again, with more introductions today and sessions and everything, that is sort of a fluctuating position. And I know the chair has discussed the possibility of looking at evening hearings or even Friday hearings if it comes to that, but no commitment on that, obviously, and it's a little early in February for that. But if people have questions about where certain bills want to land on the calendar or a bill path, I'm happy to discuss that outside of the committee time. Just I'd have more information in front of me. I'm happy to sit down with you or staff or anybody to discuss the outlook for the committee leading us through the deadlines.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Reese. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you, members. We don't have any agenda items before us. So with that,
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker does have his hand up.
Representative Baker.
Thank you. Thanks, Travis, for the good catch there. Maybe this is more of a question, too, for the chair and kind of a committee jurisdiction. Representative Nora, you had mentioned earlier that you and I have worked really hard on some of the business relief stuff. I know that in committee, I think it was on earlier this week on Monday, we asked the commissioner, who had a very good presentation about just the plans of helping businesses kind of get going again and getting out of this, obviously, this hole that we're a lot of us find us themselves in. The committee structure here, I guess I'm wondering, I heard the commissioner say, if we have ideas, bring them forward. Chair, do you see us, if we have some ideas about maybe safely and carefully getting people back to work that we can get some bipartisan support on? I know that Representative Pawlowski is working on sort of some larger things like Chapter 12 and how do we kind of work on those things. And I don't want to misstep or bring something to you if it's not your purview or something. But if we've got an idea or two to bring to you that might enhance getting businesses going, maybe it's allowing some people to go back to work if they're allowed to with some softer language. Again, we are kind of in a period right now where numbers are looking pretty good. Vaccinations are rolling out. I'm just wondering if you want us to obviously bring it to you ahead of time if we get a bill drafted. Is this the committee pathway that might see some opportunities like that and to give us some ideas of what you want to do, or should we just focus it in another direction?
Thank you so much, Representative Baker, for that question. I know we're looking through the executive orders that impact DEET and several other issues that impact the workers in general. And it's in the purview of Representative Pawlowski's committee as he looks through which executive orders do we keep, which ones do we put into law in terms of approving them. So that conversation is ongoing, and I'm hoping that once we have a clear path, some of those discussions will be coming to our committee because those are based on the jurisdiction. And I have a scheduled meeting with Chair Pawlowski to go over some of these issues so we have a clear understanding. I look forward to bringing that conversation back to the committee in the coming days. But please, if you have any questions, start with his committee and figure out how this will go, because he is looking through each and every executive order that has been signed into by the governor and how that impacts different entities. So it's a great conversation to have, and I look forward to the discussions moving forward. And some of those issues will have direct impact on workers and businesses, and this will be the right jurisdiction to have some conversation going forward.
And thank you for that, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the collaboration you and Chair Pawlowski are having. I know they've got a good bipartisan committee working on these as we speak. I hope that as we are all back in session now, all 134 members here in the House, whether we're Zoom or in the office, that we will find the right pathways to address these things. And I hope sometimes in a more urgent manner when those right times arise. So I appreciate your time on that, and I'm glad this committee can be a part of that pathway moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone, for the conversation today, and looking forward to the next meeting. Having said that, we don't have any agenda items before us, so the meeting is adjourned for the day. Thank you so much.